A police car one day was called to a high bridge where it had been reported by a 911 caller that a man was about to jump to his death off the bridge. The policeman rushed to the scene and saw the gentleman standing on the precipice of the bridge, contemplating the moment of his plunge to death. The policeman said to him, sir, you don't have to do this. To which the gentleman said, oh, yes, I do. Life is empty. It's meaningless. I have no reason to live. There's no purpose. And so it's time for me to die. The policeman said, well, sir, before you jump, I want you to take 5 minutes to tell me in detail, as best you can in that 5 minutes, why life is meaningless. But only after you've given me 5 minutes to tell you why life is meaningful. And then after the 5 minutes that we've both taken, if you still want to jump, then I won't interfere. He began to tell the man why life was meaningful, why life had significance and substance and purpose and direction. His 5 minutes were over. It was the next gentleman's now opportunity to tell him why life was meaningless. And he went into the details of his family and the pain that he experienced and the agony and the trials and the financial woes. After they had both taken their 5 minutes, the policeman reached out his hand. The man reached out his hand and took the policeman's hand, and they both jumped. Meaningless purposelessness spreads. And while it may not be as graphic as that scenario, the more you hear people talk to one another, the conversations are often emptiness talking to emptiness about emptiness. Pain talking to pain about pain. Struggle talking to struggle about struggle. Meaninglessness talking to meaninglessness about meaninglessness. Many people today, even Christians, are living decaffeinated lives. Lives with all the lead out, flat. But yet they still got a function, so they learn to live their life in falsetto, trying to operate in a range that's not theirs. Hoping that some way, somehow, I can find meaning. But often finding themselves like the Dead Sea, no outlet. And so they flitter around seeking to get from experience to experience to experience something that gives them rhyme and reason to exist. Like, as I've mentioned before, Seinfeld, when the group studied Seinfeld doing its run to discover why it was so immensely popular, the drama group came back and said the reason why Seinfeld is so immensely popular is because it's fundamentally plotless programming. It meanders from scenario to scenario without connection, rhyme, or reason. And the reason why it was so popular is because plotless people love plotless programming. People are resonating with the emptiness of the sitcom. And if many of us would tell the truth about our lives, it feels like a sitcom. Meandering from day to day, meandering from scenario to scenario, trying to live life on cruise control, simply to get through. For many of us, life is like a Sunday drive that I used to take with my dad on Sunday afternoon. The family would get in the car and he would go for a Sunday drive. Never mind, there was no real destination. We weren't going anywhere. We were just driving. And after a while, we just wanted to go back home. Because we weren't really headed anywhere. We were just meandering. We were just driving. The sense of purposelessness, emptiness, without substantive rhyme or reason, has increased suicide, has increased drug addiction, all manner of pain and problem, because so many lack their reason for being, better known as their purpose. We're talking about the benefits of knowing God, and today I want to talk to you about a great benefit of the epigenosis, the experiential knowledge of God, and that is a purposeful rather than a purposeless life. Many of us are looking for the wrong thing. We're looking for purpose. It's not wrong to have it. It's not wrong to find it, but the method to get to it is incorrect. When you have found your identity in God, God will find your purpose for you. Let me say that again. When you discover your identity in God, God will deliver to you the purpose of the ID. He will clarify your purpose because you've clarified your identity in Him. When God created Adam in Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 to 28, He created man in His own image. He created man to mirror God. He created man in His own image. And then when He created man, He says, and we will give them dominion, rulership. And then it says He blessed them. What a great flow. He gave them their identity, the image of God. He gave them their responsibility, their purpose, dominion. And then He blessed them to fulfill what the image declared to be the reason for their existence. That's how it's supposed to flow. Your identity leads to your purpose, and your purpose leads to your blessing. But if you are confused about your identity, you'll be unclear about your purpose, and you'll be living life as though you've not been blessed. There won't be any sense of divine favor upon you. God created it. Identity, purpose, blessing. And He does not want you to find out who you are. He wants you to find out who He created you to be. He wants you to mirror Him, the image, the mirror of God. We all know that identity is the key to purpose, because there's many a lady here who fusses regularly at many a man here who is confused on the issue of the relationship of identity to purpose. You say, how so? How many ladies here have complained that your man uses the chair for his clothes? He'd be throwing his clothes over the chair. Now, the ID of the chair is not a closet. The chair, its ID is to sit on. But now it's become a clothing rack. So its purpose doesn't fit its ID. It's a chair to be sat on. It's become used as a clothing rack. Therefore, it's not fulfilling its design. It's being used for something else. How many of a treadmill in a house never gets walked on, but it's used for all kind of drapes, all kind of furnishings, potting plants, and all that? Its use is not consistent with its ID. A treadmill is to be walked on. It's for exercise purposes. But because we don't use it in line of its created purpose, it never fulfills what it's designed to do. Many of us are using our lives for purposes that are not consistent with our IDs. With what God has created us to be, we're draping it with a whole bunch of other stuff and wonder why things are not working. Because our purpose is not consistent with our ID, either because we don't know what the identity ought to be, or we're not being consistent with the identity, even if we know it. God's concern is that the knowledge of Him ought to lead to His purpose for us, and you know you're fulfilling your purpose for two reasons. One, it will involve dominion. ruling your world, not having your world rule you. God created man in his own image and gave them dominion. You're ruling your world. Your world's not ruling you. And there is living under the umbrella of divine favor. There is this sense that God's favor is on me, my life, my world. Because ID leads to dominion, purpose, which leads to blessing. God has not created you simply to be here. He's not created you simply to go through the motions. He created you with purpose in mind, a divine reason for being. But let's make sure we understand. A created thing does not determine its own purpose. Let's get this straight. A created thing does not determine its own purpose. A refrigerator doesn't refrigerate because it decided to refrigerate. The manufacturer, in constructing the refrigerator, constructed it to fulfill the purpose of refrigeration. A stove doesn't cook food because the stove decided, I want to cook food. The maker of the stove put the stove together in such a way that it's designed to cook food. A can opener doesn't decide, you know, I want to be a can opener. The manufacturer, the creator, decided I want this appliance to be able to open cans. So it constructed it in such a way that it is designed to fulfill its purpose consistent with its identity. You don't go to something ID'd as a can opener to freeze something. You don't go to something whose ID is a refrigerator to cook something, because you know that ID and that purpose don't match. See, some of us are living our lives where the ID and the purpose don't match, and we think God hadn't blessed me. It is the creator of a thing that determines the purpose of a thing. So when you want to discover your purpose disconnected from your creator, you will be in a confused appliance. How many times have we said about things, that's not what that's for? In other words, you're using it, purpose, inconsistent with ID, identity. So you were created purposefully, and you were not meant to exist. You are not just meant to go to school, get a job, get married, have kids, retire, and die. There's so many people here who are looking forward to retirement. I can't wait till I retire so you can die. I can't conceive of the thought of retiring. That word, retiring, so I can die. In other words, God created you with a purpose. He created you with a divine design, an identity, to fulfill a reason for being. You're not just supposed to just be here. How you doing? Well, I'm here. Well, I didn't even have to ask that. I see you here. I don't know, why are you here? God created you for a purpose. Psalm 33 verses 13 through 15 says, God already has considered your work. He's already determined your reason for being, because he's the designer. He's already determined your place in life. It's already been set forth from you. That's why I love the scripture read in your hearing, Jeremiah 29. Verse 11, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for welfare and not for calamity, to give you a future and to give you a hope. I know the plans I have for you. The designer sets the plans for the designed. I know the plans I have for you. But I hear you, you're saying, but you don't understand, my world right now is a mess. Is a mess. Well, in this chapter, things were a mess. Verse 4 says they were in exile. They were in a bad location. They were in Babylon. That was a mess. They had some economic things. He had to tell them that you have to refigure your economics there and plant vineyards. And there were housing things. And he said, you got to get the housing things straight. And there were family issues and marriage issues that all had to get straight. All that in chapter 29. And in a messy situation, he says, I have plans for you. So I don't care how messed up, jacked up your life is right now, God still has plans for you. You say, how do I know he has plans for me? Simple, you still here. He has plans for you. And he says, and my plans for you are for good and not for calamity. They're not to mess you up more. These are great plans I have for you. It involves, he says, a future and a hope, a future. In other words, tomorrow. You know, hope is a great thing because you can go a long way with hope. Even though everything's not, nothing's going right now, your life is not like you had planned it out to be. Folks that messed over you, your life is just out of sync and out of whack. But if you have hope, see, the problem is hopelessness. Where all hope is gone. Hope means where I'm going is better than where I've been. My future is going to be better than my past. My tomorrow is going to be better than my yesterday. That's hope. Hope means something to look forward to. Hope is always future oriented. And if you can see hope, see, that's what so many of our, reason why so many of our young people are acting crazy is they don't see a future. So everything is right now because I don't see something out there to shoot for, to look forward to. So let me just exist in the now. But if you can look up and see something out there called hope, well, let me give you some hope. God has a plan for you, a purpose, a reason for being, a divine design. A manufactured destiny. Even though right now you may be living in a situation that's not particularly pleasant, like they were living in Babylon. Right now it wasn't particularly exciting. That's why he has to write them. As I like to say, chapter 29, verse 11 is a good verse in a bad chapter. It's not only a good verse in a bad chapter, it's a good verse in a bad chapter located in a bad book. If you're depressed, don't read Jeremiah for devotions. That's a depressing book. But in a bad chapter located in a bad book, we still got a great verse. I have a plan for you, saith the Lord. A plan for your good, not for your calamity. Look at your neighbor and say, you got a future. You say, you got a future. You may be in a mess, but you got a future. Because I got a plan for you, saith the Lord. Well, now you ought to be asking the question. You ought to be asking the question, where can I find it? How can I locate it? I want it. Especially when your plans are a mess. No, not a mess, a hot mess. Notice what he says. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you search for me with all your heart. Guess what he doesn't tell you to do He doesn't tell you to go plan hunting. He says, I have a plan. You're saying, let me go find the plan. He says, uh-uh. I have the plan, find me. The knowledge of God leads to your purpose, because it will clarify your identity, and identity leads to purpose. He says, look for me, search for me, find me when you look for me with all your heart. He says, you locate me, you locate the plan. You know, I loved Indiana Jones. I loved all the Indiana Jones movie, because he was like such a manly kind of guy. You know, he was, you know, he was facing challenges and overcoming them. And so I loved Indiana Jones. And one of my, the favorite ones was Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. And he's looking for the Holy Grail. And that's when his father was in the movie, Dr. Jones. And it was all about the plans to locate the Holy Grail. And everybody wanted these plans. And so the written plan map got stolen by the enemy who was looking for the Holy Grail too. So Indy tells his daddy, Dr. Jones, he says, Dad, we're never going to find the Holy Grail because they have stolen the map. You feel like anybody's stolen the map of your life, and you don't know where to find it, and you don't know where to find you, and you don't know where to find where you're supposed to be, because the enemy has stolen your map, the map of your direction, your destiny, and your purpose. He says, Dad, they've taken the map. Dr. Jones looked at Indy and said, Indy, I wrote the map. They took the paper, but I got the map. Even though you may be confused about your direction, your purpose, and your destiny, I have the map, God says. I have plans for you. So don't go looking for your purpose. Locate me, because I have the plans. Seek me, search me, for you will find me when you look for me with all of your heart. Okay, the more confused you are about your direction in life, the more persistent and desperate you should be in your pursuit of God. The more confused you are about your direction in life, the more disoriented you are about your reason for being, the more out of sorts you are about your identity and how it connects with your purpose, the more desperate you should be. Then you will call upon me. Then you will look for me. And I will be found by you. When I used to play with my kids, hide and go seek. I'd hide and they would go seek. And they'd be looking and looking and looking and looking and looking and looking. And then they'd get tired. They get tired and they say, Dad, where are you? I can't find you and I'm tired. I would rearrange my location so I would make myself findable. Why? I know you're asking, why, God, you gonna send me through all that? Why you don't just step out here so I can see you? Because God wants you to know whether you really want him. I mean, it's like a guy saying to a girl, why I gotta talk to you nice and take you out and be nice to you? Why don't you just look at me and go crazy? The question is, are you really wanted? Are you really wanted? So he says, seek me, search for me, and I'm going to make myself findable. I'm not trying not to be found. I'm trying to be found. I just want to know you want to find me. Seek for me and search for me, and you will locate me when you look for me with all of your heart. All of your heart, all of your heart, all of your heart. No competing loyalties. no competing loyalties. When a butterfly wants to experience its purpose, it must leave the cocoon behind. It can't drag the cocoon with him. When God takes you to where he wants you to be, you're going to leave some other stuff behind. Because the other stuff is confusing you. You don't know whether you're a caterpillar or a butterfly or a butterfly caterpillar-ish. You don't know who you are because you've been still hanging with the cocoon when he's trying to set you free for a new destiny and a new purpose. The designer determines the purpose. So you're seeking me because you want to know what the designer had in mind. Lord, what do you want me to do? Even Jesus said, I have finished the work you sent me here to do. Because the designer has determined your purpose. And yes, it involves your personality. It involves your gifts. It involves your orientations. God has taken all that into consideration in mapping out the plans. When we do a plan in one of our facilities, there is a master design. This master design lays out. Then we get working drawings, and that goes into the idiosyncratic details of what we're going to construct. So we know where we're going. We have the plans. They have made the plans for the building. See, a lot of us, it's not that God doesn't have a plan. It's just that his plan keeps getting interrupted by bad weather in our lives. He has a plan. And it's a good plan. And he says, if you look for me and search for me and pursue me with all of your heart, locating me locates the plan, because I have the plans. The construction of your life, I have. I love this. In Acts chapter 13, it says, they ministered to the Lord. Verse 3 and 4. They ministered to the Lord. The people were ministering to the Lord, it says, and then it says, and the Holy Spirit said, separate for me Paul and Silas for the work I have called them to do. I like that because he called their specific names. Separate for me Paul and Silas, not just tell them all come to church. Listen, when you want to know God's purpose for you, you must be seeking God. It's not a group. You won't get this as a group answer. You want to hear God call your name. You want to hear God call your name. But you're saying, but you don't understand. You don't understand. You don't understand. I'm in a messed up situation. I've made mistakes along the way. I've made wrong choices. I've gotten involved with wrong people. Things are out of whack in my life. I'm getting older. I'm middle age or beyond. You may have all these reasons why God doesn't have a plan. Let me tell you how good God is. How good at what he does. He can hit a bullseye with a crooked stick. While it may look like God's taken a long time, he's really... the longer he takes constructing the better thing. See, it didn't look fair for God to be taking this long with Joseph's life. This man was born into a dysfunctional family. Okay? He was born into a dysfunctional family. Whenever your siblings want to kill you, that's a dysfunctional family. All right? His daddy was the deceiver. He was the deceiver par excellence. This guy was dysfunctional. His brothers sold him into slavery. That's dysfunctionality. He's accused illegitimately of rape. Was put in jail unfairly. That ain't right. What kind of purpose can you have for Joseph, God, when everything around him is dysfunctional? Dysfunctional people, dysfunctional employer, dysfunctional jail. I mean, everything around this guy is dysfunctional. But every time something went wrong with Joseph's life, the Bible says, but the Lord was with Joseph. Have you ever thought about that? The Lord being with you in a hot mess. He said, I'm in a hot mess, and the Bible says, and the Lord was with him. Say, well, how is the Lord with me when nothing's working out? Because when nothing's working out, something's working out. You just can't see it. Finally, they remember him in prison. And now he goes from the outhouse to the White House. He's now the second in charge because his identity in God created a gifting from God that opened up an opportunity for him to demonstrate that gifting at the right time in the right place. And now they made him second head of the kingdom. His brothers now got to go to him to get food. They come to him to get food, and when they come to get him to get food, they're trembling. He does something that's awesome. Joseph dismisses, they didn't recognize him at first, and Joseph dismisses everybody out of the room, all of his servants now, because he's big time now, he got servants, put them all out of the room. And then he says to his brothers four words that would forever change everything. He says, come near to me. Now, I think I know why he told them come near. They haven't recognized him yet. He says, come near to me. He dismisses everybody in the room. Why this private moment with his brothers? Because there would be one sure proof that he was their brother, Joseph. His circumcision. Only Jews were circumcised. He dismisses everybody. Come near to me. This is who I am. And then he says in Genesis 50, those powerful words, he says, you meant it for evil. You were out to get me. You were wrong in me. But the reason I can forgive you and the reason I won't carry this for the rest of my life holding a grudge against you is because God meant it for good. God put me in a hot mess to bring me to this place. And he brought me to this place to save you. And your children. God has a purpose when you in a hot mess. Caleb. Israel rebelled against God, wouldn't go into the promised land. He said, let's go. They wouldn't go. That was a 40-year delay. God, how are you going to let other folk delay my blessing? I can't go in because they're not going in. God, I done married this man, I done married this woman, and they delaying my blessing. How they delaying what you have for me? Good news for you married people who your partner's delaying your blessing. He killed everybody else. So if you want to stay alive, you better stop delaying that person's blessing. 40 years later, he goes into the promised land, and 40 years later, when he gets into the promised land, this is what he says in Joshua 14. He says, he's not 85 years old. He says, and I am as strong today as I was on the day we should have entered the land. So he says, give me my mountain. The one that God promised me 40 years ago. Yeah, I thought it would have happened a long time ago, but I have, he says, wholly followed the Lord. I have wholly followed the Lord. I have sought the Lord, haven't turned away from the Lord. I've been consistent with the Lord, and the Lord has, watch this, preserved me for the blessing. He preserved me. He kept me. And I'm as strong and as young and as vibrant at 85, he says. Than I was at 40. Because God has the plan. Identity leads to purpose, and purpose leads to blessing. Because in verse 14, he says, I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and I will restore your fortunes. I will restore your fortune. When something breaks down, a good thing to have is a warranty. Because a warranty is a guarantee against defects. When you have a warranty, the manufacturer takes responsibility for making it right, making it good, fixing it up when it's broken down. But warranties are only good when you're using the product for the purpose for which it was given. You can't intentionally ram your car into a wall and talk about, I have warranty. Because that would be connected with irresponsibility. God's got a warranty on you, but only if you're willing to function in his purpose. And I love this word. I love this word. I love this word. He can restore. Now, you know, here he's talking to the nation Israel. And this is the most phenomenal thing in history. In May 1948, when Israel became a nation again to fulfill God's promise. God promised that that nation would never cease to exist, and he would bring them back from the four corners of the earth to become a nation again. Something that has never, ever, 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 ever happened in human history. No other nation has stopped being a nation, come back to be a nation while retaining their same language, coming back to their same location. But God is faithful to his word to fulfill his purpose. I will restore your fortunes if you seek me and search for me with all of your heart. This means if you want to clarify your identity so that you might experience your purpose in order that you might be blessed, God must be taken off of the loop of your life. And he's got to come downtown to City Hall where the legislation is made. He can't just be a bonus out there somewhere. He's got to be the essence, the sine qua non, the irreducible center. He can't just be in the vicinity. You must seek me and search for me, and you will find me when you look for me with all of your heart. Many of us have TVs in our kitchen, TVs in our kitchen. If you have a TV in your kitchen, that means it's there to be glanced at while you do other things. When you wash dishes, you may be looking at the TV. When you're eating, you may be looking at the TV. You may be talking on the phone and cooking and glancing up at the TV. And the reason I know that is that if there's a TV in the kitchen, it's probably a small screen TV. If it's in the kitchen, small screen TV. Because in the kitchen, the TV is not generally the centerpiece. It's something that you glance at from time to time. If you really, I mean, really, really, really want to watch TV, you go to the den. Because that's generally where the big screen is. That's where the comfortable seating is. You sit in that chair and you watch the big screen TV because now you're giving it focused attention. See, many of us have God in the kitchen of our lives. We glance at him while we do other things. I'm taking care of this over here, but I'm looking at you on Sunday morning. I'm taking care of this over there. I peek at you on Wednesday night. I'm looking at you over there. I'm going to throw in a little quick prayer right now around dinner. While we do other things, we glance his way. God is wanting to be in the den where he's the focus. Because when he becomes the focus, what will pop up on the screen is a show with your name on it, identifying your divine design, your reason for being. And you will be amazed at the crisis moments. And that's what you want to look for. It doesn't always happen this way. But what you want to look for are the crisis moments. The moments that he creates an intersection. That's where he crosses you with something or somebody. Or some situation that's life transforming. He creates intersection. Do you know how Saul became king of Israel? Chasing donkeys. He was chasing donkeys. Father said, go find the donkeys. He couldn't find the donkeys. He said, I'm going back home. I'm going to quit. His servant said, no, don't quit. Daddy sent you out here to find donkeys. Keep looking for the donkeys. God told Samuel, when you see a young man looking for a donkey, when he crosses your path, that's the next king of Israel. So he out there searching for donkeys. What's searching for donkeys doing this dirty job got to do with my purpose? Because God's going to create an intersection. He's going to cross you with something, some situation, or somebody that will be life transforming. I'm in Dallas today because of an intersection. I was supposed to be in Indiana. I had applied to Grace Theological Seminary in Winona Lake, Indiana. I had gone up. We had found housing, everything, preparing to graduate. And I'm just going to Grace Seminary in Winona Lake, Indiana. And that's where I'm headed. I had my plans. I had my purpose. I had my goal. I was good to go. A professor comes up to me and says, "Have you ever thought about Dallas Seminary?" I said, "Well, no, I'm already accepted when on the lake." So as far as me, the conversation's over. I've got the plan. He says, "You know what? If you will fill out the application, I will pay the application fee for you to mail it in just to see what happens. You're going to pay. I can write my name." So I applied, no second thought, because of an intersection with a professor that totally, a long story, but totally turned around my direction from where I thought I should be going. Because while I had a plan, God had a plan for me, and it was different than what I thought my plan was. He creates intersections. Unusual, unique connections. Many times unexpected. Other times it's just normal things that he sends a twist to. And sends you in a whole different direction. "I have a plan for you, saith the Lord. A plan for your well-being and not your calamity. To give you a future and to give you a hope. And I will restore your fortunes. I know it's messed up, jacked up. It's bad right now. But I know how to..." Billy Taylor lives in DeSoto. Billy Taylor is a junkyard specialist. Billy Taylor goes to junkyard and finds junk. Stuff folk have thrown away. Billy Taylor will get junk from the junkyard, take it to his garage, turn it into a contemporary art piece, and sell it for $5,000. Because he can take junk and restore it and give it value. So I don't know how valueless you think your life is. If Billy Taylor can go to a junkyard and take thrown away stuff and make it valuable, the creator of the universe can come to your yard and take stuff that looks like it has no rhyme, no reason, no purpose, and all of a sudden give you a life worth living, full of purpose and meaning and destiny. There is no junk in this room that God can't take to his garage and turn into a masterpiece. That's why Ephesians 2:10 says that having been saved, 8 and 9, you were now created a masterpiece, he says. Unique, valuable, unusual, and rare to fulfill his good work, which he's already created beforehand. He's already pre-planned you. Like ladies prepare pre-planned meals, God has prepared a pre-planned life when you seek him with all of your heart. He was a lazy guy on the football field. He would half play, half not play. And, so they just kept him around. Then they came to the last game of the season. The guys in front of him got hurt. And so they put this young man in the game. And he was a running back, and he ran wild, like a wild man. Who is this man? Who is this kid? We've never seen anything like this before. We didn't know he had this in him. After the game, they went to him and said, what got in to you? He said, 2 days ago, my father died. My father was blind. So the day was the first day he got to see me play. See, when you know daddy is watching, it changes how you perform on the field of life.